Here we are once more, Mr. Parry.
Definitely.
Time for yet another On The Record podcast.
Yes.
Not quite award-winning. We can't describe it as that, but I'm sure it will be award-winning.
Soon will be.
But certainly bypassing 2 million listens, well on its way to 3 million.
Brilliant.
With our friends at Audio Boom.
Love
it. What have you got for us today?
Well, listen, what would you say if I said to you, how much do you value your erotica capital?
What?
Your erotica capital.
Well, first of all, I'd have to ask you what you mean by erotica capital, because I don't know what that means. What does it
mean? Erotica capital means using what you have in terms of good looks and personality to impress other people, to get yourself a better job, to get your own way in life, and to basically use it as a weapon in the human relations we'll have to go through in life.
Yes.
Now, how do you value yours?
Well, when you say erotica capital, then that means it's not just about sex then, right? It's not just
about appearance.
Erotica.
It's about image. It's about how you get there.
Well, you know, interestingly enough, it's a very good question you asked, because I think you and I have both suffered over the years from the ageing process, right?
No, you suffered, not me.
Well, no, I think you have
said
as
to
well.
Me quite recently, you're not sure that if you were a free man, you'd still be attractive to women these days. You've said that to me.
Well, the point about getting older is that you are less attractive to the opposite sex, and indeed possibly even to the same sex, right?
Well, I don't want to be attracted to the same sex.
No, me neither.
Because I'm heterosexual.
But when I was a young man, when I was in my 20s, I was always getting hit on by gay men.
Yeah.
They really, really fancy me, right?
Yeah, I think that's because you have those sort of what's the looks? You know, something between male and female. What's it called?
Androgynous.
Androgynous.
I think
you have an androgynous look.
No, I don't think so.
I think you looked a bit like Mick Jagger as well.
I told you it was the lips. I think it is. I told you that story about the famous story about the Frenchman in that place, Gordon's.
Oh,
you know,
the
wine bar.
Yeah.
When he was sitting next to me, and I was actually with the mother of my children.
Did he say, "Could I kiss you"?
He said, "Do you mind if I kiss you?"
I said, "Fucking punched him."
I just said, "I beg your pardon."
Yeah.
And he said, "Do you mind if I kiss you?" I said, "Well, you can kiss me on the cheek." Right, which he did.
Yeah, right.
But I don't know what else he had in mind.
Jesus, I wouldn't let him get anywhere near me.
Well, no, I mean, I'm not homophobic, right?
Anyway.
Point is, bottom line is, right?
Yeah.
I would say that over the course of the years, I've never, aside from when I was kind of in my mid to late 20s, I don't think my image as a look has been particularly attractive.
Right, okay.
Really.
Well, you've done all right over the years.
I've done very well over the years
I said all right. You know, I was trying to be modest for you. I've done very well.
No,
you know.
I've done very well. But
so
let
in your periods of freedom, you've done a lot of pulling, have you?
Well, hang on. Huh? I'm not talking. You're talking about jobs as well as relationships,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, mostly relationships.
Okay. Mm. Well, no, I've done very well, but I would put that down not to the way I look so much as what I say.
Yeah.
The fact that I'm very entertaining.
You look pretty repulsive now, I have to say.
I do. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people say that. You're not the only one saying
that.
In fact, every time I get involved in a Twitter spat with anyone, which is, you know, about once a month these days.
Yeah, once a day.
The one thing that they always go about, you look like a paedophile, fat, ugly, horrible bastard.
Oh, no, I wouldn't say you look like a paedophile. I would say that,
but that's what they say.
A bit over the top, mate. Good job you're not on the single market anymore. Anyway, the reason I'm talking about this is because there's a new book out called Honey Money, Why Attractiveness is the Key to Success.
Yeah.
Written by a doctor called Dr. Catherine Hakim, who is a medical doctor, but also specialised in personal relationships. Mm. Now, she says women should use their looks to get ahead. Mm. And then as you get into the book, she says...
Sorry, has somebody not told her that that's what they do?
And goes on throughout the book saying so should men. She says, I'm sure many would balk at this conclusion of mine, but the fact is, physical and social attractiveness is what I call erotic capital. It is valued, is a valued commodity in our image-obsessed society. So why shouldn't all women, and to that extent men, exploit it, right?
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
I don't think there's anything wrong with it at all.
Yeah.
Now, let me tell you a specific example, right?
Go on.
There is a woman known to you and me in the world of journalism.
Yeah.
And when I was the news editor of the Daily Express, and Sir Nicholas Lloyd was the editor, I went in his office one morning and we were having a bit of a shake-up on the staff, and he said, look, why don't we give... Person X, right? This is a female woman, very gorgeous looking girl.
Mm.
The job as chief showbiz reporter.
No, yeah.
And I said, well.
Well, now you've identified her, haven't you?
No.
Well, you have?
No, I haven't.
You've just told me what the job was.
No, I haven't.
Well, you have?
No, I haven't. Don't worry.
Well,
I didn't say she got the job. I didn't say she got the job.
That's not the job that was on offer.
I didn't say she got the job.
Right.
And also, how long it went on for, or what year it was, or decade, or
anything. Doesn't matter, I know.
No. So I said, well, the thing is, Nick, I said, she never actually worked in showbiz before, and I don't think she's got any contacts.
Does it ever occur to you that people like that might actually listen to this?
Yeah, hang on.
I'm just telling you, does it ever occur to you?
Well, maybe.
That people who are.
But
you
I'm being
are
very complimentary.
To,
I'm
well,
being
that's
very
not
complimentary.
The point. You shouldn't be talking about people as if, you know, they're sort of some kind of chattel.
No. Anyway, I'm not identifying anyway. Anyway, so Sir Nicholas said.
Well, you are if she's listening.
Well, listen. So I said. Look, Nick. Well, this might come as a pleasant surprise to him.
I very much doubt
it. The way the sort of interview between me and Nick for the new Chief Showbiz reporter went.
Okay.
And Nick said in the sort of firm sort of way he did, in direct way, he said, "Yeah." He said, "But anybody in showbiz who's male will want a shagger." And I said,
really?
"Yeah." said,
"I'm sure he'll be delighted you've told this story."
So I said, "Well, that's an actual conversation."
You can't just defend it on the basis that it's an actual conversation.
Just being pragmatic, just being practical, right? And I said, "Well," I said, "if that's the basis on which we're appointed." Anyway, it turned out to be entirely accurate and true.
Mm.
And it also turned out to be entirely accurate and true that this lady was so good and so clever and so bright, she managed to lead quite a few people down the garden path towards that particular conclusion, but it never happened.
I see.
And she was very clever.
Is this your way of backtracking?
No, backtracking at all. I'm telling you the whole full story, okay? And that's the way it is. So what I'm saying is, looks can count on a regular basis. I mean,
I know there's any doubt that in certain jobs, you know, a woman's appearance is going to help her out.
Yes.
You know, because we've all been in workplace scenarios where, you know, better looking men, certainly in television, better looking men and better looking women get on camera.
Of course they do.
It's just a fact of life. It's a fact of life.
When I was a young reporter, 18 or 19, on the Chester Chronicle, I've told you before about Judith. She was the quite elderly news editor.
Oh, yeah.
Judith Owens, her name was.
All right. She's dead, is she?
She'll be dead now.
How do you know that?
Well, she's about 58 then.
Do you think she has any family?
That was about 30 years ago. Well, I don't know, but she's a very nice lady.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they might be listening.
And she was the one who was having, you know, the old hanky-panky with the editor, Herbert Hughes. Yes. He's 10 years older than her.
That's good that you've given his name out
well. He's dead, definitely. You know,
yeah, but these people have got families.
Don't
worry about it. You don't care about that. Well, I'm worried about it, actually.
Don't worry about it.
You know, I don't want this podcast to become the subject of some kind of libel.
No, no. It won't be.
Indeed the subject of absolute infamy.
No, it won't be, because it's all true.
But it doesn't matter if it's true. It's embarrassing to people. What if you're the
son? I'm not embarrassed.
Well, you're not, but what if you're the son of that woman you've just described, right? And you didn't know, for example, that she had an affair with her boss.
Well, it doesn't matter. It's just one of life's things. You know, it happened. So,
yeah, but it's
not
the sort of thing you should be making public if it's not known.
Well, look, come on. I believe in openness. You know,
oh, really?
I believe in perestroika and glasnost and
why
all
do you
that.
Never
you know
let anybody ask you the questions that they want answered?
Then? No, no. I answer any questions.
Since you believe in perestroika,
how much
money have you actually got?
Well, we can't get into that because I don't know. So it would take too long to find out. Now,
well, it wouldn't take that long.
What I'm saying
just
is...
Just to look at one of your many bank accounts.
Now, I knew from the moment I walked in, you know, I saw this spark in Judith's eye, and she thought, wow, look at this robust young man. You know, I had a flock of auburn hair, you know, I had a beard and all that kind of stuff, you know. And I could see she fancied me from the moment.
Really? Was this sort of toy boy?
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Is that
right? Yeah, I was like.
Did she ever try it on with you?
19. Well, she would have done if I'd allowed her to, you know, but I mean, of course, I kept my distance. She once said at one sort of, you know, leading do or something like that, you know, I so love Michael, but the problem is, he's always so bloody drunk. You know,
well, she wasn't wrong about that.
No, she wasn't, because we used to go to the pub all over lunch, you know, till about... Well, in those days, the pubs opened and closed at lunchtime.
Yeah.
We could find one that opened at 10:30, and then we'd move on to the ones that opened at 11:30.
Yeah.
Staying till 2:30, but there were a couple that
then
closed
you'd get
at 3:00.
Out. Yeah.
You'd close at 3:00, and then we'd come back to work at 3:00.
Yeah.
But then we only worked until 5:30 when the pubs opened
again.
But it was amazing.
It was always bizarre, that, wasn't it? Because what on earth could they do? I mean, they could really clean the place between 2:30 and 5:30.
No. It's very odd, isn't it? But, what I'm saying is it actually worked quite well.
Mm.
Because if you sit around an office all day, you actually just get bored and you don't really do a lot and you find ways
to
put stuff up. No, but what we used to do was...
Yeah, but it's called work.
We used to come back at 3:00 and then work intensely for 2.5 hours. Yes, that's right. Ring up a load of people, get a load of quotes, you know, write a lot of
stories. Make up a load of stories.
That's right, yeah. And pass them all over to Judith Baskett.
Find
you know, because she was a news
missing, not missing.
That's right, yeah. And then get out at 5:30, and then in the morning...
And did you not go back then after that?
No, never went back after 5:30.
So what time did you go to work?
Oh, we just get to work for 9:00.
So you're in at 9:00, right? Let me just get this right. 10:30, you're off to the pub.
That's right.
You're there till 2:30.
Yes.
4 hours, right? Having only been in the pub, in the office, for an hour and a half.
Yeah, but you see...
You're then back in the office for three more hours.
2.5 hours.
2.5 hours.
2.5 hours, yeah.
So you're actually working a total of about 4 hours
a day.
But you're spending the best part of about 7 to 8 hours in the pub.
Yes, that's right. But four very intense hours where you focus. No, in the 9 o'clock in the morning, what you do is, right.
Is this a daily paper?
No, it's a weekly paper. Oh, weekly. It came out on Friday afternoon, Chester Chronicle. Mm. So you'd work out, right, here's the stories, line them all up,
didn't
make a few calls.
Did you get busier on Friday?
Oh, got very busy on Thursday afternoons. Oh, okay. Used to actually, sometimes, I have to say, we made a sacrifice. We didn't go to the pub until 6 o'clock on a Thursday evening sometimes.
Well, but you still went at lunchtime.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. But we stayed there.
I mean, is it any wonder that you're so business down the shitter now?
No, I suppose
because
not.
Because in the end, it couldn't possibly survive on that kind of model.
No, not really. No, you know? I agree. But anyway, the point of the story is, over the years, we've seen it. We've all seen it newsrooms. Yeah. If you're good looking, you get a better job.
Yeah,
you know?
It's true.
And I totally agree with
that.
But
I think it's a bit unfair on the women, more so than it is men, because the men have other ways of, you know, impressing people, if you like. Like, for example, you remember the famous Mrs. Merton quote?
Yes.
Mrs. Merton quote. Is it Merton? Mrs. Merton.
Mrs. Merton.
Mrs. Merton, where she said famously to...
George Best.
No, not to George Best, to Paul Daniels' wife.
Oh, that's right, yeah. What first attracted you to the multi-millionaire Paul Daniels? That's right, yes, exactly.
Really, and you could ask the same question to Chris Evans, who, you know, these are not particularly good-looking men.
No, you're right,
but they're incredibly wealthy.
Yeah, of course they are, yeah. Of course
I mean, you must have found that later in life, that you attracted women not because of how you look.
Well, I never flash my wealth, so, you know...
Well, you don't look very wealthy, because, I mean, you wear really, really crappy clothes.
I try to. I mean, never...
But if you sort of... I don't know if you swan about in your Mercedes, you know, and you get out of the car and you kind of, you know, hang about.
Well, what I used to
yourself towards the bar.
I've always been very industrious, and even when I was like 16 and my first love was around, I always made absolutely sure I had enough money to make sure she had the best dress on at the Christmas ball, you know, that we got taxis everywhere and used to drive past in a taxi past a bus stop where some of our friends
stick your fingers up at them.
Didn't stick my fingers up at them, but made sure I pressed my face against the window so they could see it was me in the back of the taxi, you know what I mean? And
exactly, and
never stopped to give them a lift or anything.
But
like
I mean
that.
There are men, powerful men, who have made an absolute living out of seducing women on the basis that they were powerful men.
Yeah.
Politicians.
Yeah, of course they are.
You know, journalists, authors.
Of course.
Captains of industry.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, how many of those have had affairs with people, and you look at the two of them and you think, well, what the hell was she thinking?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's because the guy's powerful and rich.
Well, look at Aristotle Onassis.
Yeah.
Without being
cruel. He looked
cruel,
like a turtle.
An ugly man.
He looked like should have had a shell on his back.
He looked like he should have had a shell on his back. He was like a little hunchback, something like that. But not only did he marry...
I don't think you can say that.
Did he marry, eh?
I don't think you can say hunchback.
Well, he looked like that.
Yeah, but I don't think you can say that.
Okay, what's the medical term?
I'm not sure, actually.
Okay, well, whatever the medical
term
is.
But certainly not hunchback.
Okay, well, I'll take that back. Yeah, okay, yeah. The hunchback of Notre Dame. He wasn't one of them.
No.
No, so what...
The bells.
So I was going to say what?
Jackie O.
Yeah, but now she was the most famous widow and woman in the world.
Yeah.
Because she was the widow of President Kennedy. She was also, although I've never quite got it, supposed to be one of the most beautiful and glamorous women in the world.
Well, she was.
Well, was she?
Yeah. Do you know...
I thought she was rather plain.
My sister's former husband who died, who was the guy who was nominated for the Pulitzer Prize.
That's right, yeah.
He was actually at the Kennedy wedding.
Really?
Yeah.
Good God.
JFK's wedding to Onassis.
That would have been in Hyannisport, probably.
I think it might have been in Washington, actually.
Oh, was it? Yeah,
I think it might have been in Washington.
His father would have.
Because it was when he was. It was shortly before he was president, but it was part of that whole set.
I think it was when he was a senator, wasn't it?
I think so.
Yeah, I think it was. For Massachusetts. That's why I thought it might have been in Hyannisport. Yeah, yeah. But anyway, look. The point of my story is: not only did Aristotle Onassis, through his vast wealth, he was the richest man in the world.
He was.
He was a Greek shipping billionaire.
Well,
even
people
in those
used
days.
To say. I remember in those days. Mm. He's richer than Onassis as a kind of a compliment, you know,
if you had that kind of money. That's right, yeah. So not only... And remember, when John F. Kennedy was alive, the reason that they got to know Onassis was because they used to borrow his luxury liners to go on holidays because they were the president and they needed isolation.
Yeah.
And I think they honeymooned on one of his boats
as well,
you know.
I think you're right.
Because that's what rich and powerful men do, get to the sources of power, right? So the world was shocked. My mother was horrified when it was announced that Jackie Kennedy... was marrying Onassis.
Really?
And my mother said, I can't believe she's marrying that ugly little man, you know, and you know, it's outrageous.
Well, she obviously worked out that she needed money for her family.
Yeah.
And she did very well out of it because, I mean, all the Kennedys, as cursed as they were, and it's a terrible sort of legacy that many of them have suffered from.
Yeah.
She had no shortage of cash.
No, they were very wealthy.
To her kids.
No, they were very, yeah, but they were very wealthy.
And
the
also,
Kennedys.
I think, but
yeah.
also, I think that she yeah. didn't want to be so reliant on the Kennedys.
I think
either.
She, that's absolutely right, because yeah. she was, in fact, the widow, and she was almost a cast out from the family.
Yeah.
And she could see Robert F. Kennedy becoming yeah. President, and therefore she wouldn't be the first lady even in abeyance.
Yeah,
you know.
Right.
So anyway, not only did Onassis marry her, but the legendary story is on the first night of their wedding, after they got married.
Yeah.
They were in the, you know, the marital bedroom and all that, and he suddenly got up. She said, "Where are you going?" He said, "I'm going to see my mistress."
Right.
And she said, "What?" He said, "I'm going to see my mistress, Maria Callas, the famous opera singer," and walked out and left. And that's where they drew the guidelines to how this marriage was going to go on.
Okay.
So not only did this ugly little man have the world's most famous woman in his bedchamber, he also had another lady who was almost as famous and almost as beautiful wearing another bedchamber.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right, it can happen like that.
It can.
Yeah.
And nothing to do with his looks.
No.
Right? Let's not pretend.
No, nothing at all.
It's all to do with the money.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now then.
Show me the money.
Now then, have you ever thought about taking up knitting? This is a serious question.
Knitting?
Yes.
No.
Because you've done other things which are sort of bisexually motivated, if you
what
see what
mean,
I mean.
Bisexually
well,
motivated.
Cooking, cooking.
Cooking is not bisexual.
Well, it was for years.
Well, would you call Jamie Oliver a bisexual?
No, definitely not. No.
Would you call Gordon Ramsay?
I've got the wrong word.
A bisexual.
I meant that crosses the sexes. That's
it
what
doesn't.
I meant. You know what I mean?
Most of the male, most of the main sort of celebrity chefs, right? From Anthony Worrell Thompson, the famous cheese
what about
shoplifter. Fanny Craddock's one of the few female ones you can name. I mean, you can't name another one.
Mary, what's her name?
Mary Beard.
Mary Beard?
No, it's not Mary Beard.
No, she's
Mary Berry.
Mary Berry.
Mary
Beard
Berry.
Is, in fact, a left-wing professor of anthropology.
History, isn't it?
And history, yeah.
She's got a big, long, white mane
of hair. Yeah, that's right. She looks like, you know, hair could do with a
she
bit of treatment.
She looks like a female version of you, actually.
That's a bit
without
harsh.
The beard. No, but, you know, Marc-Pierre White...
You
know, the Rue brothers, they're all male. Most of the main restaurateurs and chefs are male. So
well, okay.
The idea that it's a sort of a feminine pastime is
Anyway, doctors are being advised not to just keep handing out drugs and pills and tablets all the time.
Yeah.
But tell the patient, look, you need a new interest in life.
Mm.
And one of the suggestions that they're giving to both men and women is take up knitting.
Well, do you know, I've read, I'm sure, and I think I've even met people who are part of like a knitting circle.
Right.
Because it's become quite a trendy thing.
Has it? And do men do it?
I think they do.
Right.
I think it's mostly women.
Yeah.
But it's quite sort of upper class women.
Right.
If you know what I mean.
Okay.
You know, they're sort of high powered women who have quite big jobs. And
right.
They meet each other. And sit in a circle and knit.
It's funny you should say that, because you know what those circles are called?
What?
Knit and natter.
Knit and natter,
yeah,
there you go.
So what you do is you knit and you talk to your friends at the same time.
Yeah.
Apparently you can knit without having to actually look at the needles that you're using at the same
time.
Well,
do you know, I mean, your mother probably knitted,
My
she?
Mother knitted incessantly.
Yeah.
My mother knitted my
did
goalkeeper's jersey.
Did she?
For the King's School Chester Junior School when I was the goalkeeper.
Well, she must have been very good if she was able to do that.
Oh, it was green on one side and blue on the other.
No, but I mean, was it like tightly stitched and everything?
Oh, it was brilliant. And then a roll collar on it.
Because my mother was never very good at it, right?
Mum knitted jumpers, she knitted socks, she knitted...
My mother...
She knitted my Everton scarf every season. She knitted me a new Everton scarf.
Isn't that a bit lame, though, to have your mum knitting your Everton scarf? Shouldn't you have bought one?
No, in those days, it was great.
No.
It was different, you know?
No, I wouldn't want that.
Yeah, yeah, she did,
my mother was useless at knitting, pretty
much.
Really? Yeah. As much as she was useless at cooking. She wasn't very good cook,
right? Really?
I never got my taste for cooking from her.
No, really?
Because she just didn't fancy it at all. Well, because she worked, I forget. I mean, she was an unusual case of a woman who, back in the late 50s,
she's a teacher.
Moved to London to be a teacher. She worked. But she used to sort of knit a little bit, kind of, but was her heart was never in it.
Mm.
And everything that she started out making, like a jumper, it always turned into a scarf.
Right, okay.
Because she couldn't figure out how to do anything else.
Oh, I see. Well, my mum must have been very good at it
line.
Then. She
could
read it all. She used to knit the front of the jumper, the back of the jumper, the sleeves, stitch them all together.
My auntie had a friend who used to knit us kind of soft toys.
Right.
You know,
I know
soft,
what you mean.
Like a teddy bear knitted.
Yeah, I know, or a little bunny rabbit.
Or a bunny rabbit knitted,
Well, this all comes from Professor Helen Stokes Lampard. That's a great name, isn't it?
It isn't bad.
Who is chairman of the Royal College of GPs.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, the great thing about the knitting, if you go into the knit and natter groups, is that you're also then getting rid of loneliness, which is a great problem for
apparently
older people.
So.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, apparently so.
So I might suggest that my mum, who's now in her mid-80s, might get into one of these knit and natter.
Well, depends
because,
if she's got the arthritic hands.
No, she hasn't. No, my mum's still very able in her mid-80s. Yeah, and she's sociable and she likes knitting in the past. I might suggest she might get into that because I think that would definitely help her.
I seem to remember years ago there was a comedy sketch, I think, where some woman was in it and was knitting herself a man. Remember that?
No.
I can't remember what it was.
Sounds pathetic, that, to me.
Well, it was one of those things that, you know, when you watch comedian comedy shows and it's meant to be funny.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I watched something the other day and it was meant to be funny.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely bloody awful. I can't remember what it was. But I remember thinking to myself, this is, one, not funny.
Yeah.
Two, this so-called comedian has not said anything funny.
Right.
And three, I'm switching it off.
Right,
absolute rubbish.
Okay, good. Now, I want to tell you something. Get off knitting for a minute. I want to tell you something about your homestead, Hampstead, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Now, did you know that in Hampstead you have Britain's richest tramp? Because years ago he applied for the legal rights to put up a homestead on a tiny piece of Hampstead Heath.
Oh, yeah.
And that patch of London land that Harry Hallowes first squatted on, because that's all he did, in the late 1980s, is now going to be put up for auction and will raise several hundreds of thousands of pounds.
Really?
Which he intends to give away to homeless charities.
Oh, right. Now, he's still alive, is he?
He's still alive. I beg your pardon. He died two years ago, aged 88, right?
There you go.
But during the time, because he'd squatted there so long, he acquired the title deed to the 7,000 square foot plot in one of Britain's most expensive suburbs.
That's quite big, isn't it?
He first built a shelter in 1987 after being evicted from his council flat in Highgate. Now, look, I know that this is your local, so I've got a little map here, and I'm going to show it to you, and perhaps you can tell me if you recognise the exact location of where old Harry Hallowes nicked a bit of Hampstead Heath. Which, let's face it, is one of the most luxurious locations in this country.
Yeah, I can tell you exactly where that is, because where the red dot is, Harry the Hermit's plot, is between Kenwood House and Highgate. Now, if you remember, if you drive from Hampstead,
you're going up to Spaniard's Inn territory.
Well, going
the
other way. No,
that's
if you're coming from Hampstead, you go past, like, Jack Straw's Castle.
That's what I meant, Jack Straw's Castle,
You head towards the Spaniards.
Yes, that's
you go through the Spaniards.
That's right,
through that little narrow bit.
Yeah, where it's like a toll gate.
Yeah, it's like a toll gate. You go past Kenwood on your right.
That's right.
Bishop's Avenue's on your left.
That's right.
You go a little bit further down.
Yeah.
And that's where this guy is.
Is that right?
Yeah, he's past Kenwood House.
Yeah, I know exactly where it is.
And you can walk, and just before you get to Highgate Village.
Yes.
In fact, I'm pretty sure that Andrew Morton, now a good mate who's now become a very wealthy author of Royal Books, lives along there somewhere.
Story.
Yeah. He lives around there somewhere, or at least he did.
And how far was that from your upbringing?
Well, not far. Yeah. Mine was kind of what's called West Heath. I was kind of behind Jack Straw's Castle down the other way.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Down
yeah.
towards, like, Finchley Road, Swiss Cottage.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I love that area so much. I don't get up there as much as I should.
No.
But it's a beautiful part of the world.
It is, I agree.
It really is.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, funnily enough, talking of tramps, I mean, I remember there was a tramp. I don't remember this guy, because by the time 1987 rolled around, I was living in New York.
Right.
And in fact, I got married in 1987.
Yeah.
But in the sort of late 70s, early 80s, when I still lived in London, there was a tramp that used to always walk around Hampstead.
Yes.
And he was literally one of those old-fashioned type tramps. He used to have about four coats that
he
would
wear.
Did
he have a trolley?
I don't think he had a trolley. Or he had a bag, I think.
Yeah, like a bundle of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, a bundle of stuff. But he always wore. The thing that struck me, but he was always wearing about four coats.
And did local people sort of take pity on him, give him food and all that kind of stuff?
I think so, because all the restaurants kind of looked
after him. See, if I had a tramp like that, my neighbour, I'd like boot him out the neighbourhood.
No,
I wouldn't encourage him to stay.
All the restaurants, because I used to know all the restaurant owners in Hampstead because I worked for the cake company, because we used to make cakes for all of them.
Yeah.
And it was great, because I used to be able to. Whenever I took, when I started taking girls out, even when I was 16, I used to go to all these restaurants, and everyone thought, God, this kid's pretty sophisticated.
Free cakes and all that,
Well, no, because they would give me a break on all the wine and on all the food.
Yeah,
and I'd take these women there, and they'd be like, look, he knows the menu
And did it pay off?
Oh, yeah.
Did you go into sexual activity with these ladies?
Quite often on the heath itself, actually.
On the heath?
Well, I was living with my parents at the time, so it wasn't always possible.
And of course, you slept in the kitchen sometimes, didn't you?
No, we'd moved from that place, I did have my own bedroom.
You had your own bedroom. You didn't feel necessary.
But, you know, it's difficult, isn't it? You can't bring young women home to your place when your parents are in the other room.
Who I've told you about before, Kevin Little. We all used to go out to the King's Disco in Chester and all that. We all lived at home because we were just too young to be able to afford anywhere else, 18, 19.
Sure.
But Kev completely dominated his parents' council house. Mm. So he'd take a young lady home.
Well,
right,
kick them out.
Hey?
Would he kick them out?
No, what he'd do is he'd go back and the young girl would say, oh, you know, is this where you live? Yeah. Are your mum and dad in? He said, yeah, don't worry about that. So they go into, like, they only had one room downstairs.
She's like, I'm not worried.
Yeah, exactly. So you walk through the front door, and there's the stairs upstairs, and there's the passageway through to the kitchen, and then the kitchen at the back, and the lounge is on the right. They only had one room. It's a council house, you know? So he'd say, go in there, darling.
Like,
you know,
two up, two down sort of thing.
Yeah, that's right. Hmm. Yeah, yeah. So he went upstairs, and then he would get the duvet cover off his bed, right? And he'd wrap it up.
Yeah.
And as he was taking it downstairs, his mother would come to her bedroom and say, oh, Kevin, what are you up to?
Yeah.
He'd say, shut up and go back to sleep.
Oh, so that would be night time.
Oh, this would be 3 o'clock so, in the morning see, after we come out of the King's Disco.
Well, and he'd come bring the duvet down to the living room.
Bring the duvet down to the living room.
Yeah.
Spread it out in front of the fire. Then indulge in mass sexual activity for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
If his parents came anywhere near, he would, like, you know, shout at them and bully them.
Yeah.
Get back to bed.
Yeah.
You know, what are you doing down here? Yeah. Get out. You know.
That's not very
he
nice.
Ran, he ran
was he the
house.
Only child?
No, he had a younger brother.
Right.
Who, you know,
was he there as well?
Well, he was about 3 years younger, and they used to share a bedroom, so obviously he couldn't, you know, get involved in the old...
I don't know if I should tell this story on the record, but I suppose I can.
Yes.
I'll try and telecate as I possibly can. I went out with a girl once from Highgate,
right,
who works, of course, in the Louis Patisserie, because that was a great sort of hunting ground for girlfriends.
Yes, exactly,
yeah. Because the girls were worked in the front of the shop.
Yeah.
And she lived in a place called Cromwell Road, I think it was, just off Highgate Hill.
Right.
And I used to go around there quite a lot, and her father...
Yeah.
Was quite well to do. He was in a brass band, right?
Yeah, a brass band. Yeah. What did he play in the brass band?
I think
band?
He played the trumpet or something. But I think he was originally like a Yorkshireman.
Did he stand at the door and you know, was serenaded as you came in?
Sadly, and I don't understand how this could have possibly happened, but I must have been quite brazen. But we were on the floor of the living room, right? Going at it, basically.
Right, yeah.
And he opened the door.
And if he was quite well off, it was a bigger house than just one room downstairs.
Yeah, it was quite a big house. It was one of those kind of Hampstead Highgate style.
It was a sort of terrace house. Like,
you know?
Like a mock Georgian.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
But he was
not a terrace house, a townhouse.
Well, no, but it was on a terrace. I mean, it was connected.
They call them townhouses.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And he was so kind of well-to-do that he actually apologised and shut the door again and disappeared.
Right. Instead,
because I'm thinking, oh, Christ, you know,
he's beat you
he's going to come in and drag
Roger
me off
Rising
her.
His girl, yeah. His
well, his
daughter. Yeah,
she was
exactly,
only 16.
Yeah.
I mean, we were both 16.
Yeah.
But he said, oh, sorry, and shut the door behind him.
Well, that happened to me once.
And I kind of went, Christ almighty, what am I going to do now? I can't look at him in the eye, can I?
That happened to me once in my home in Chester when I was about 16 or 17. But it was my father who walked in the lounge. But we weren't in flagrante, as you would call it.
Yes.
It was merely a bit of groping and stuff. And he was
so
embarrassed.
This was, I'm afraid,
the real
full
thing.
Yeah.
And he was so embarrassed, he slammed the door, you know, and so out. And then, of course, when the young lady had gone home, he was furious with me, you know, dare you.
Right.
I said, well, you know, didn't Mum tell you my girlfriend was here?
Yeah,
you know, he was just basically a nasty bit of stuff, my old fella, and wanted to ruin my night.
Yeah,
it was as simple as that.
I can't blame you for that.
But on one occasion, right, this is interesting, I was doing that trial in Leeds I've told you about sometimes, about the doctor who went down for 17 years for poisoning his wife so he could start Rogerising his mistress, Pamela Collison, okay?
Oh, yeah.
And she should have gone down as well, a lot of people thought, but she was found innocent by a jury, so of course she had not committed a crime.
So she had no part in it?
Well, the allegation from the court was that he was feeding his wife drugs for so-called anemia, right?
Oh, yeah.
But he was a doctor... And
oh, so was it one of those slow burn poisons?
Yes,
where,
it was.
Where, you
it
know,
was.
You
he was
keep...
feeding the tablets,
yeah, right,
and then asking other experts. You know, I can't seem to cure my wife's amnesia. The reason was he was given the tablets which caused the amnesia.
Right, okay.
But you know, he didn't tell the doctors that. And then eventually she died.
It's amazing how much that stuff goes on. You know.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Well, I think there's a lot more of it than we know.
Well, so his name was Vickers or something like that. He did 17 years.
How did
years.
He get caught then?
Well, he got caught at the end because, of course, they had a fallout. You know, Doctor.
Oh, him and the mistress.
Yeah, the mistress.
See, that's
exactly. And so she went to the police.
Yeah.
And because he was, you know, he was going on about prenups and all that.
Yeah.
And she wanted him to hand over the big house. It was in Newcastle, actually.
Right.
Funny, although I wasn't working in Newcastle then, but the trial was at Leeds.
Mm.
And she went to the police and said, I don't know if you're interested in this, but that Dr. Vickers, and by the way, he was chair of the committee on the BMA, the British Medical Association, that looked after standards of doctors.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it was so hypocritical,
amazing,
the whole thing, yeah. But anyway, what happened was, she went to the police and said, you may be interested to know that twice a week the doctor sent me to a chemist with these prescriptions to get tablets for his wife, and I kept one of them.
Right.
Do you want to have a look? Well, they looked at it. It was the poison and not the tablets to cure the anemia.
And I guess he could write one of those any time.
Absolutely. Yeah. So anyway, it backfired on her because she got charged with murder as well for being the person who was going and getting the tablets.
Right.
So her defence in court was...
Accessory before the fact.
Exactly. Her defence in court was, I didn't know what was on... You know, I'm not a doctor, I can't speak Latin and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas, you know, the prosecution prosecution trying to build up a collusion between these two to get his wife, so she could move into the family home. Anyway, right. Amazingly, and as I say, she was found innocent of any crime.
Yeah.
She got off. She thought she would go to jail.
Yeah.
She'd actually applied to the prison authorities to start studying Japanese.
Oh, yeah.
She was that convinced she was going to jail. On the day,
why did she want to study Japanese?
I've no idea. On the day that the jury came back, we were all stunned in the court, at Leeds Crown Court. She was found not guilty. Yeah. We thought, golly, he's probably going to be found not guilty now.
Yeah.
But he was found guilty.
Mm.
And the look he gave her, knowing that he was going down for 17 years, and she was then free, very attractive young woman, to go around and, you know, receive a bit more, you know, horizontal refreshment from a lot of other
men. Do you think that that was the end of them? That she didn't go visit him in jail or anything?
No, at all. Not at all. Saddest thing was, he only had one son, and the mother, of course, was dead because he'd killed her.
Right.
And at the end of the trial, I saw this poor lad who was 17 with Milky Bar Kid glasses walking away from the trial with a little bag because he'd been thrown out of his home. Once his father had been found guilty, the house was seized.
Right.
And it was terribly sad. And his father did the full 17 years.
Is that what happens then? Do they seize... If you're found guilty of murder...
Yeah.
And you've got a house.
Yeah.
Surely they can't just sell it.
I don't know.
I don't think they can do that now.
I don't know. Other members...
Because you remember that guy, Warboys, the ghastly taxi black cab rapist guy?
Yeah.
He's got all kinds of property, apparently.
Yeah.
He's not out yet, and hopefully never will come out, but apparently he's trying to make more, you know, amends and trying to get out himself. Yeah. But he's got property that they haven't taken off him.
I think he'd had to mortgage the house to pay for all his legal fees. You see what I mean? He didn't own the house anymore.
Okay.
Or something like that. Mm. But you're absolutely right about that. You know the girl who was chief assistant to Sarah, Duchess of York, Fergie?
Yes.
She went to jail.
The crazy one.
The crazy one. Yeah, went to jail for killing her boyfriend because he wouldn't marry her.
Yeah.
So she, guess what she did?
She was nuts.
She smashed him over the head with a cricket bat while he was asleep.
Didn't she stab him
and then stabbed
times?
Him six times and then took off in the car and tried to put it out of her mind till a friend rang and said he's been found dead. Said, oh, that's terrible.
Yeah,
you know?
She's out now.
She's out, but you're absolutely right about the property. She had a small place in a good part of London, like Knightsbridge or something like that, which, you know, she'd managed to buy, you know, with a loan from Fergie or something like that. By the time she got out of jail, it was worth over £3 million. Because she did about 18 years as well, you know, for a ghastly murder. But now she's, you know, she's a millionaire.
Oh, so she can sell it. Or she can live in it.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, the reason I'm telling you this story is the trial was at Leeds Crown Court.
Yes.
I was staying at the Dragon Aura Hotel in Leeds. We used to go down to the cocktail bar every night after the trial.
Yeah.
There was a barmaid there who took a real fancy to me, you know. Uh-huh. I took a real fancy to her.
Right.
So I would say, you know, what time are you off? She'd say, you know, when the bar closed, 11 o'clock. I said, right, well, I'm going out with the lads, going to have a few drinks. And I said, see you downstairs at 11. She said, yeah. Back to her house, a council house in Leeds, right? Uh-huh. And one of these weird houses where, you know, there was a long flight of stairs to the next floor, but there was a bedroom on the ground floor.
Uh-huh.
That was her bedroom.
Okay.
So I said, yeah, okay, let's get in there. So in the situation you've described, get into the bedroom, you know, humping away, you know what I mean, for want of a better expression. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not a pretty sight.
No, no, no. And all of a sudden, the door opened and closed.
Right.
And I sort of, you know, froze, you know, as you do. And I said... What's that? Who's that? She said, oh, just my dad coming home. He's, you know, he works a late shift at the post office or something, you know. I said, what?
Well, did he just open your door?
No, he opened the front door and slammed the wrong door. Yeah. And I said, but, you know, I shouldn't be here, should I? Having sex with you? Yeah. She said, yeah, he won't mind. He's gone upstairs now, don't worry. And completely...
And what age was she?
I don't know. How old was I then in my early 20s? She's probably 20 or something like that, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
Well, I think, also, don't forget, in those days, I mean, it may be different now.
Well, but people lived under the same roof.
But also, it was quite permissive, in a way, in the 70s.
Well,
you know?
Well, it was like the pill had only come in the 60s and all that kind of stuff.
It was quite permissive, and people kind of understood that their children, albeit that they were grown up children, might be doing that.
The outcome of this was tragic because, you know, she so enjoyed the night, you know, the next night, she said... Because what we do is we go out for dinner in Middlesbrough, and there's not many places to go out for dinner in Middlesbrough. You know? Yeah,
well, in Leeds.
It was in Leeds. No, it was in Middlesbrough. It was Teesside Crown Court. I'm sorry.
Tell just remember.
No, it wasn't. It was a Dragon Aura Hotel in Middlesbrough. Middlesbrough's worse than Leeds. Yeah. Okay. So, so we'd go out for dinner and come back and have like a few cocktails to end the night in the bar. Like you always did. We used to serve till 3 a.m. and then get up again at 9 o'clock and go and do the trial. You know, everybody. I could do it in those days.
Oh yeah, you didn't have any sleep.
No. So, she said, you're coming back? I said, yeah, great, thanks very much indeed. And then as we approached the house, and I thought, I said, what about your dad? Oh, yeah, he'll be home at midnight.
Mm.
Okay. So I thought it wouldn't affect me. But then I had erectile dysfunction.
Nothing had anything to do with all the cocktails.
Well, well, no. And
you're still thinking about the dad.
Of course I was. Yeah, I was wondering any time now, dad's going to come in. So she dumped me because she said I was no good to her.
Well, I mean, that's very true.
I mean, there was no sign of affection, and sort of, you know, sometimes when that happens, it's, oh, it's all right, darling, don't worry, you know, it's just a passing thing.
Yeah, it's not.
Don't panic, you know, I'll be gentle with you and all that kind of. No, it was none of that.
No.
Off you go. Yeah, exactly. You've got erectile dysfunction. And guess what? Within a few nights, you know, somebody else was leaving the cocktail bar with her.
I'm sure.
I mean, you know, that wasn't very nice, was it, to me? Yeah, what about my feelings?
Yeah, what about them?
What about my feelings?
Yeah, well, you didn't have any feelings for her anyway.
Well, no, but I had feelings about myself.
You were just making use of her. Yeah, well,
she was making use of me. That was the truth.
I used to go out with a girl who lived in South London, right? And she lived with a granny. Because her gran, or a nan, as she called her, and it was in a place, quite a fashionable now part of London called Broccoli.
Near
Honor Oak Park. And I never really knew anyone. I never knew. Whenever I went to her house, I had no idea where I was.
No, exactly.
Because I was from North London.
How did you get there?
We used to get there on the train from Charing Cross Station.
I see, yeah.
And it was one of those weird relationships whereby... I never knew if I was going home with her until we got to Charing Cross Station.
I see.
And she would then decide whether I was going to get on the train or not.
I see, yeah.
Because some nights we'd get to the station and she'd go, right, Syria.
Yeah.
Cheer. And I'd be left standing there like a sort of kipper.
Yeah.
Going, well, what do you mean? You know, I just bought you dinner.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You know, but you can't say,
no.
I just bought you dinner there for.
I expected a bit of sex as
well. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I thought you'd at least be taking me home for a bit of a shag.
Yeah.
No, instead of that, then other nights she would get to Charing Cross and she'd go, are you going to buy a ticket then?
Yeah.
It was very weird.
Yeah, I mean, women
can be quite strange.
Yeah, exactly.
But I found it quite odd to be in her, because it was like an old person's house.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It wasn't like a modern house. So you'd go in.
What you mean.
And I'd be like, where's your nan? Oh, she's in bed.
Yes.
Where? Well, sort of on another floor.
I was
a bit like you. I was kind of like, I don't really fancy this very much.
Not very good. Okay. No. Well, that's about it.
It is.
Yeah, indeed.
That's quite an interesting sort of piece of history.
It certainly was.
This is On The Record. We are the Two Mucks. We'll have more soon. How much money have you actually got?
Well, we can't get into that because I don't know. So it would take too long to find out. Now,
it wouldn't take that long.
What I'm saying
is... just look at one of your many bank accounts.
Now, I knew from the moment I walked in, you know, I saw this spark in Judith's eye and she thought, wow, look at this robust young man, you know. I had a flock of auburn hair. I had a beard and all that kind of stuff, you know. And I could see she fancied me from the moment.
Really? What, sort of toy boy?
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Is that right?
Yeah, I was like...
Did she ever try it on with you?
19. Well, she would have done. If I'd allowed her to, you know, but of course I kept my distance.
But she
once said at one sort of, you know, leaving do or something like that, you know, I so love Michael, but the problem is he's always so bloody drunk. You know, that's.
Well, she wasn't wrong about that.
No, she wasn't, because we used to go to the pub. All over lunch, you know, till about. Well, in those days, the pubs opened and closed at lunchtime.
And you look at the two of them and you think, well, what the hell was she thinking?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's because the guy's powerful and rich.
Well, look at Aristotle Onassis.
Yeah.
Without being cruel.
He looked
cruel,
like a turtle.
An ugly man.
He looked like he should have had a shell on his back.
He was like a little hunchback, something like that. But not only did he marry...
I don't think you can say that. I don't think you can say hunchback.
Well, he looked like that.
Yeah, but I don't think you can say that.
Okay, what's the medical term?
I'm not sure.
Okay, well, whatever the medical term is.
But it's certainly not hunchback.
Okay, well, I'll take that back. Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. The hunchback of Notre Dame. He wasn't one of them. I said, what about your dad? Oh, yeah, he'll be home at midnight.
Mm.
Okay. So I thought it wouldn't affect me. But then I had erectile dysfunction.
Nothing had anything to do with all the cocktails.
Well, no.